Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I'm going to touch on a lot of diverse areas in the Meyer material tonight. I've been really kind of jumping all over the place. I'm not sure why. I occasionally go through this, but I thought it might be good to step back and give an overview. Billy Meyer is a man from Switzerland. He's in his late 80s. He lives in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti, which is about 52 minutes east of Zurich by automobile. He lives in a beautiful green forested area. There's a building there called the Semyase Silver Star Center, and it's dedicated to Billy's third extraterrestrial contact, a woman named Semyase. Semyase is a female who contacted Billy in the middle 70s. She used to land her ship right there in Switzerland during the day, step out and speak with Billy under a tree. And these conversations were recorded in what Billy calls contact notes. After the meeting, Billy would go back to his computer, and then he would get these telepathic messages in kind of like a symbol language, which he would type very, very quickly. So his meetings with his extraterrestrial contacts are documented very well. Billy had meetings with human extraterrestrials, and his contacts date back to a time when he was 5 years old. Billy grew up in a little town called Bulak, which is a municipality in Switzerland in the canton of Zurich, and which is near a place called the Glatt Valley. And Billy started to get these telepathic messages from an elderly man named Svath. Billy would also get mental images. At some point, Svath told Billy to go out into the forest, and then out of the sky came a very strange-looking pear-shaped craft, which landed in a field nearby. Svath got out and introduced himself and then brought Billy back into the ship, took Billy up into a high orbit, and started to tell Billy about the life he was going to have in the near future. Because Billy's life plan was kind of preordained, Billy came into this life to be a prophet and a teacher. His real name is Edward Albert Meyer. Edward means guardian of the treasure. Billy is also known worldwide as BEAM or BEAM, Billy Edward Albert Meyer. And Svath told Billy to establish himself in the background because the people of the earth tend to make for themselves idols. And Svath warned Billy not to go into the public too much, but to perform his mission in the background, writing what's called the spiritual teaching. And the spiritual teaching is designed to wake Earth humanity out of their sleep. And eventually, the Meyer material says this teaching will become a worldwide movement that will bring peace, love, and freedom to the human beings of Earth. The spiritual teaching deals with the understanding what the universal consciousness is, which sometimes the Meyer material refers to as the creation. It also talks about the human spirit. We all have a human spirit. The human spirit resides in an area of our middle brain called the superior colliculus. And the human spirit is said to be a fragment of this universal consciousness. The human spirits survive after death. It's called your spiritual consciousness. And this is part of what this teaching is all about, teaching us about certain creational natural laws like reincarnation. Another creational natural law is love, not romantic love, but a wisdom-conditioned love. And another extremely important creational natural law that's just not talked about enough is called the law of striving. And there is a book that Billy has written called The Way to Live, Die Art zu Leben, which really introduced me to the law of striving, and I didn't even know what it was until I read this book for the first time. And let me read a little section from, I always like to read a little bits and pieces from his books during the show. It says here, therefore, a human being who has ascertained the effective truth to such a degree can no longer have anything made evident to him from the outside. Because he, in his striving, which is conditioned by creational law, fathoms all evidence in himself. By working with his or her ideas and gaining knowledge and cognitions from them, which he knows to convert in logical sequence into experience, which he or she then in turn forms into wisdom. So one of the things the Meyer material talks about is the importance of independent thinking. And this is one of the things that the spiritual teaching is supposed to restore into the people of the earth is the ability to have independent thinking. Now, Sloth was an extraterrestrial human who was extremely old, about 1,000 years old, and Sloth told Billy about things that would happen in his future. He was told that he would lose his left arm in an accident. He was told that the people in his group would turn against him, some of them, even that his own wife would turn against him, call him a hoaxer. And Sloth taught Billy something called spiritual telepathy, which allowed Billy, young Edward, to receive information from this higher spiritual plane called Arahat Athrasada. One of the other things that Sloth warned Billy about was the time that we're entering into now, which is called the third millennium. And Billy was told as a young boy growing up in World War II that the Americans, us, we would drop atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And that would begin this very, very difficult age that we're in now. One of the things that Sloth told Billy was that the Earth human no longer understands what the creation is. And Sloth explained that there's a oneness and a connectedness with all and everything. And this is because of the immeasurable love of creation. Creation is the superintelligence that created our universe. It's more of a neutral, positive spirit. It's not like a heavenly father, like our religions have taught us. It's a neutral, positive energy. It's a superintelligence. It really has no personality the way we think of a personality. It also, in the German, is referred to as a Wesenheiten. And what that indicates is that this intelligence, it functions according to a predetermined plan in terms of its evolution. Where we here, as human beings, we have this free will that's allowing us to evolve as we see fit, where creation is somewhat more automatic in its evolution. And it's almost robotic in some aspects, except in the aspect of love. It radiates love. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of creation. So the Meyer material doesn't use the term God because they explain that that term has wrong connotations. So they use this idea of a universal consciousness. Now, Billy, in Contact 31, this is many, many years later. This is Billy. We're talking about Billy now when he was 4, 5, 6 years old when he met with Sloth. He met with Sloth until he was 16 years old. Then he met with a woman named Asket until he was about 27. And then he had 11 years of kind of a normal life with no contacts. And then about, I think it's in the early 70s, that his contacts picked up with Semyase, who I mentioned earlier. And in the 31st contact with Semyase, Billy was treated to a trip on the Pleiaren mothership. And Billy got to learn something about the oneness of creation when he was on the ship. And it talks about the self and the personality kind of being overcome. See, the extraterrestrials were on this great mothership. They had brought Billy aboard, and they were taking these extended hyperleaps from one star to the next. And each time they would take a hyperleap, Billy would experience the oneness of creation. And it says in Contact 31, this is the stage of the great unity and the oneness. And here all the self and all the personality is overcome. The consciousness is the call of the eternity and the eternal call of the truth and the all-embracing love. And what can be greater than it? Because everything is born out of it. So everything is born out of the love of creation. The superintelligence that expresses its love through the beauty of its creation. So if you look at trees and you look at the sun in the sky and you look at birds and other animals, cats and dogs and horses and deer and the rolling hills, you'll see the oneness and the beauty of creation. That's how this intelligence expresses its love. Now, if it couldn't use human words because they would be too limiting. So it builds nature in this beautiful repeating patterns. There's many repeating patterns in nature. Back when Billy was speaking with Sloth, Sloth told him about reincarnation and the fact that Billy had had 6 other lives on the earth. I think he had more than that, but he had 6 very important lives where he had been a teacher before, like he was going to be during this lifetime. And he had been the people that today we call Henoch, Eliah, Jesaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel. I said Jesaiah. We say Isaiah today. Emmanuel and Muhammad. And during this lifetime, he's known as Billy or Edward Albert Meyer. Now, who were these extraterrestrials that visited Billy? Well, one interesting thing is that they left the Earth in 1995. Up until that time, there was about 2,862 extraterrestrials on the Earth. They lived in bases in Switzerland, in North America, in Asia. They come from a star system that's some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. They live on a planet called Era that's very Earth-like, very much like the Earth, except it's more like the Earth was under pristine conditions, say, back, you know, in the 1300s, the 1200s, when we had these incredible forests everywhere, very thick air, no pollution, no radiation, a very reasonable-sized human population, and plant life and animal life teeming everywhere on the planet. That's the way Era is. That's the way the Earth should be and would be if we would get back to living under these creational natural laws. But in 1995, the Pleiaron left the Earth along with 2,862 extraterrestrial humans from 12 different races. They all left the Earth as well. They came from Lyra Vega. They came from the Pleiaron star system and other nearby star systems to us, maybe Alpha Centauri, maybe the Barnard star, who knows. But for some reason, these extraterrestrials had to leave the Earth. We don't know why yet. It's a very disturbing mystery. But I want to get back to this concept called the creation. And there's an evolutive energy with creation. And creation is immeasurably higher than human beings. It's a pure spirit energy. And it's not possible for us to become in communicative contact with creation. Creation is said to be universal self-awareness. It is the source of all life within our universe. There are many other universes. Now, one of the most important understandings is this first creational natural law, which is the law of love. And I talked about it briefly when I said the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation, and creation radiates love. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. Love is the highest principle in all creation. Everything follows that principle in absolute logic. The love of creation is said to be everywhere because without it, nothing would be able to exist. And we should be aware that we exist only because of the love of creation. And everyone comes up against the radiating love of creation, but we don't always realize that because we have a free will and we turn away from creation. But by default, every animal, every plant lives by creation's plan. So what we have to do as humans is learn again true love and learn about creation's plan. We don't understand love on the earth because reverence is the fundamental element of all existence. The deepest awe and respect for life. And it says, let me read this, what Billy says. He says, reverence, human of earth, is the fundamental element of all existence. So it is therefore also the fundamental element of love itself, which is built on this all-embracing reverence. And since this is so in truth, it is also an impossible thing that love once awakened and built up in truthfulness can ever weaken again. You see, true love is not false love. False love is the love that we think about mostly on the earth. It's an emotion-based love. It's subject to incredible fluctuations in its intensity. And as an example of this false love, I'm going to read to you a little section from a book here. And it's on Clinton's war on women. And it talks about some of the battles between Bill and Hillary. Let me begin on page 190 here. Well, let me begin on beginning of chapter 12, where Bill and Hillary stopped for gas in Park Ridge, Illinois, and Hillary recognized the station attendant as someone she used to date in high school. Later in that day, Bill shrewdly quipped, "See, if you'd have married him, you'd be working at a gas station." And Hillary smugged, "If I'd have married him, he'd be president." In 1993, Hillary began Inauguration Day cursing and shrieking profanities at Bill as she demanded to have Vice President Al Gore's White House office. And it says here, Hillary has a long history of being domestically violent with Bill. Hillary has beaten Bill, hit him with hard objects, scratched and clawed him, and made him bleed. Anyway, that's typical of affective love, love that's based on purely affection rather than wisdom. Wisdom-conditioned love is a harmonious state of absolute connectedness in all things, in indestructible form, and without temporal limits. Genuine love is a wellspring of consistency, which is absolutely independent of age and appearance and personality. Now, I've been bouncing all over the place in my studies lately for whatever reason, and I wanted to speak briefly about something in the book, Might of Thoughts. And it talks about, if you're not familiar with this book, Billy has a great book. It's called Macht der Gedanken, The Might of Thoughts, which teaches us how to control our thinking. And if I had to, in one sentence, sum up the meaning of this book, I would say The Might of Thoughts teaches us to think in what's called a neutral, positive, equalized way. And this is called the law of harmony. And when we function in the law of harmony, our whole life tends to go better. Well, if our thoughts get out of this neutral, positive balance, it says in the book here that negative and positive are two forces that should always be together. And they depend on one another, and we shouldn't remove the negative or the positive. And when we do that, we get out of balance. And I want to talk a little bit about something on page 102, which talks about depressions. And depressions being caused by what's called the flattening of feelings. And I'm just scratching the surface on this, don't understand all the implications of this. But the book says that unconscious or conscious negative thinking produces a flattening of feelings, which can lead to depression. Now, strong thoughts that are imprinted with feelings have for the human beings who live with them what's called a profound and existential significance, because these structures of thought are stubborn. And they can only be influenced with great difficulty. So once you have this structure of thoughts, and it's really interesting the way Billy uses the word structures of thoughts, because a structure is an arrangement of interrelated elements of objects in a system. So we have these structures of thoughts. And when we have these structures of thoughts, sometimes unconsciously, we are thinking in negative ways, which affects our feelings. Now, feelings are said to be very important because these feelings discharge thoughts. And thoughts create feelings, and feelings influence the psyche. And these feelings feed back to the consciousness. So feelings arise like this. However, if thoughts are of an unconscious nature, triggered by unconscious perceptions of some sort and by an unconscious recognition, then often the functions, the form, the feelings function in an unconscious way. So we have to be very careful of unconscious thoughts. It says here that truthfully, negative thoughts and feelings which emerge in conscious and uncontrollable form, as well as in unconscious, uncontrollable form, are necessary. You know, the thoughts, they produce the feelings, and the feelings have a life-supporting, life-preserving significance. Therefore, we shouldn't be fighting our thought, our feelings. It's the feelings discharge the energy of the thoughts. Sometimes we don't even know the origin of our own feelings. So, and the feeling isn't emotion. Emotion is something that explodes with a lightning force. But this spiritual teaching of the Meyer material is all about learning to control our thoughts. It's learning to understand nature. Now, Billy had his contacts with Svath, his contacts with Asket, which I haven't really talked about very much. Billy had, at least not tonight, Billy had contacts for 11 years with a woman from the Tao universe. She first sent a robotic ship to Switzerland, which landed on top of a hill one cold, kind of windy evening. Billy sat down in the ship and he was carted off to Jordan. No one else in the ship but him. The ship became visible and he was flying along in this invisible ship. Landed in the Middle East in this place called Jordan, a country called Jordan, and out of the sky came Asket's ship like a falling star, and poof, there it is, 300-meter disc. Suddenly, and it lands, and it sits there for half an hour, and nobody comes out. And finally, Asket comes out and comes over and picks up Billy, and they go back into her ship, and then they fly nearby over to the Great Pyramid, land somewhere, and the ship, of course, becomes invisible. And Asket puts a device on Billy and makes him invisible. And they went down far below the pyramid there, far below the Great Pyramid. I've told this story many times. And Billy saw the headquarters of the Giza intelligences. And the artifacts, the false artifacts that they had constructed, which were perfect replicas of the cross, the thorn of crowns, and a blood-encrusted nail. And they were planning to use these artifacts to, again, kind of stir up the people of the earth, because they had used religion for many, many years to deceive the people of the earth. So these Giza intelligences, they can be traced all the way back to the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria. It's a very interesting story. These Giza intelligences, they ruled mankind in a kind of a tyranny. For thousands of years, they were on the surface of the earth, and they finally went below ground and still used religion. And they had these telenautic impulses, which would control the people of the earth. The Meyer material says the God mentioned in the Old Testament, Jehovah, was one of these leaders of the Giza intelligences. The lineage goes something like Eris the 11th, who had a son, Jehave. Jehave had a son named Jehovan. Jehovan had a son named Erisame. Erisame had a son, or actually was taken over. His spot was taken over by Hen, who was also known as Jehovah. The God of the Old Testament, who was put out of power by Comegal the First, and then finally he was put out of power by Comegal the Second, who lived right up until the late 70s. And these extraterrestrials influenced Hitler through the Thule Society, and they were always disrupting the people of the earth. They were trying to put themselves in power. They were trying to create a one-world religion. Now, ironically, I have been studying some of the goals of the New World Order lately. And Billy doesn't use that exact term in the Goblet of Truth. He talks about the secret dark order. And he says that it was in particular the Roman Catholic Church that inherited the practices of the inhuman Roman Imperium. establishing an evil consciousness conditioned tyranny in the place of the former Roman tyranny. So we are under the tyranny of our thinking. And the attack, most of all, is at your thinking and the freedom of thought. Now, the elite who are in power today are a very negative force. The first goal of the elite, the Billy, he calls them the Secret Dark Order. And this, by the way, is not from the Meyer material. This is from other sources. But it dovetails pretty well with what Billy says about the Secret Dark Order. So I thought I would just bring this up quickly. The first goal of the elite is to create a one-world government. The world government will be a system in which people with knowledge about science and technology will take control of society. This will also include a one-world church and a unified monetary system. So in the next 800 years, which is called the third millennium, this new world order will try to do these things. And evidently they will fail because the spiritual teachings are supposed to eventually take hold here on the earth. Let me continue. The second goal of the elite is to create a technocracy. The control of the elite will be achieved by an elite group of technical experts that will control society. These technical experts will be a very small percent of the population. And our world is being turned into a technocracy. Now, Billy talks about in Contact 251, the rise of the robot people and the transhumanism that will take place. Another thing that Billy talks about is that the elite will work to take away our rights of self-determination. The third goal of the elite I have here is to take away the rights and freedoms of the public. The elite are working to take away our rights of self-determination. And we have been born into a prison, which I just read to you now, called a consciousness conditioned tyranny. The fourth goal of the ruling class is to merge mankind with machines. The elites say that humanity is obsolete. The intention of the elite is to bring in an age called transhumanism. And in Contact 251, it explains that people will intentionally have their arms and legs removed so that they can be attached to machines and sometime in the future. The fifth goal of the rich is to dumb down the public. The sixth goal, which, by the way, they're doing, and Billy describes it as, in the third millennium, he says, confusion and maliciousness will spread over the earth, and the people of the earth will become indolent, obtuse, and indifferent. And I think we're seeing all these things. So the fifth goal of the rich is to dumb down the public. And we see that in the teaching of the schools now. The sixth desire of the cult control is to place the public in mega cities. And they will. The seventh aim is to restrict our travel. We will lose our right to own and drive our own vehicles. There will be driverless cars, which will take us only to the places that we have been allowed to go. There will be very large freeways that connect the large cities, and we will be restricted to go into other areas. So I just wanted to read a few of those. I'm not going to beat you over the head with them too much because it's really kind of difficult to read that kind of material because it's rather overwhelming. So we're in a real battle, and that's the only reason I bring it up, because we need to be aware of that. So Billy had contacts with Sloth. He had contacts with Ascot. I just briefly mentioned about his trip below the Giza Pyramid, where he saw the headquarters of the Giza Intelligence as well. Billy started to have contacts with Semyase in the middle 1970s. She was 344 years old, but a very attractive woman still, young by the age of the Pleiad. She was slender, with fair skin, sparkling blue eyes, light blonde hair. But she did suffer a life-threatening accident in Hinterschmid routine. She had to be taken back to her home planet of Eura. On February 3, 1984, the very last contact occurred between Sannyasi and Billy as an after effect of her accident on December 15, 1977. She suffered a cerebral collapse in the beginning of November 1984. She was transferred back to the Tao universe. The Tao universe is where Asket is from, and I didn't really mention that. There is a parallel universe to our universe called the Tao universe, and Asket's people live there. Our universe is 46 trillion years old, and we have a sister parallel universe that was also created 46 trillion years ago. Asket's people are from there. So Sannyasi had to be transported there, and she is being treated. And eventually she'll get back the complete regeneration of all of her brain and psi powers, her abilities, and her memories that were lost. But in the middle 70s, Billy would get some wonderful teaching from Sannyasi, and she taught him about the human spirit. And she said, the human bears a spirit that does not sleep and during the deepest sleep. It records everything, all of our thoughts, all of our impulsations, and it will inform us whether our thoughts are correct or false if we've learned to pay attention. Your human spirit, it never dies. It's part of your spiritual consciousness. The human spirit resides in the superior colliculus. It's in the midbrain. And it's, in some ways, you could think of it as the real you. The spirit can never be sick. It can never be confused. It can never be disturbed. It can never be deranged. It can never be inadequate. The spirit is said to be the wonder of all wonders. Now, that's in contrast to our material consciousness. We have a material consciousness, which is your personality during the current life, your conscious mind, your unconscious mind, your subconscious mind. That can become confused. It can be feeble-minded. It can become deranged. Now, this spirit that's in your middle brain sends an energy throughout your whole body and, like, literally fills up your body with this energy. It's said to be a minute part piece of creation. And your spirit form is not really nourished by anything out of the spiritual realm. It's a purely creational product. And one of the things Billy says is, to embrace the power within you and use it to help yourself. The power within you is related to your spirit form. There is something called the swinging wave associated with the spirit form. The swinging wave comes from the electromagnetic realm of life energy. The swinging wave does. And these are periodically built up electric and magnetic fields. They're not bound to any matter. They include energies and forces which can be of immense might. So eventually, at the higher evolutionary steps, humans learn to use these swinging waves to affect other things. There's something called the Gemüt, which controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. Now, the psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. And the psyche can get out of balance. The Gemüt, the spirit consciousness, always lives in equalized harmony. So the goal is to keep the material consciousness in the same equalized harmony as the spirit form. Now, it's very interesting when you start to look at the spirit form a little bit more and look at some of the teaching associated that Emmanuel gave us about the spirit form. Emmanuel, who was one of the prophets, one of the earlier incarnations of the Meyer material, said that the body and the spirit are one. And the body actually comes from the spirit. So let me read a little section here. This is from the Talmud of Emmanuel. It says, "And since the body is a part of the spirit, in a different form and matter, it is therefore one with the spirit. Consequently, it is not two. The teachings state that there is a unity and not any way or form a duality or a trinity. If it appears to people that there is a duality or a trinity, then they are victims of deceptions, for they do not think logically, but according to human knowledge. For this reason, it is said that everything emanates from a unity." Now listen to that. Everything emanates from a unity. "And a duality seems apparent only because humans, in their limited thinking, cannot grasp the truth. Everything emanates from the oneness of the universe." And what I've been reading to you, it's a great article. It's actually a chapter in a book. And I've been working to try to understand this stuff on and off. And here are some other phrases that come from an article about the oneness of creation. And again, I mentioned this earlier. "Embrace the power within yourself and use it for yourself. And eventually this will bring an entrance into yourself." So somehow using this power and understanding the oneness of the universe, it allows us to get an entrance into our own self. And the power within is a phrase that is sometimes used in other Meyer writings. For example, "The creational natural power is within me, and I use this putting it into effect in my thinking and acting. This comes from the Meditation from Clear Visibility book." There's another phrase that says something like, "I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself." Now, Billy's teacher, Svoth, in line 70 of Svoth's explanation says, "However, this oneness and connectedness with all and everything is the result of the might and the immeasurable love of creation, which gives everything selflessly and demands no payment for it." And there's a special bulletin 38 that mentions a little bit about these fine fetal powers, and it gets extremely profound. I'll read just one little paragraph. "In particular, the talk is thereby in regard to the effect of the fine matter thought vibrations, which, in their fine matter form, are designated as fluidal energies and forces, and which, engendered through the thoughts and the feelings, also yield, outside of the brain, various effects which can be perceived by humans." So your thoughts, whatever thoughts are, because science can't really agree yet on what thoughts are, but thoughts affect, through fine matter thought vibrations, areas around you. And these fine fluidal energies can show up in the furniture around your house and in your trees out in your yard. So these fine fluidal energies relate to telepathy, to levitation, teleportation, the use of clairvoyance in remote viewing, and they are individually different in each human. And telepathy, in telepathy, alpha waves play a big role, just like in meditation, because these alpha waves flow in the thought current. Synchronously through both hemispheres of the brain, where they are active with the processing of pictorial and pictorial images. And it's almost like being under hypnosis or being in a trance. And these thoughts and feelings can reach another brain that's 3 light seconds or 900,000 kilometers away. So your telepathy can travel 900,000 kilometers away, a tremendous distance. So these are things we feel sometimes when you feel someone burying two holes in your back when they're staring at you and you turn around and you can feel it. These are strong thought currents, fine matter, these electromagnetic vibrations, the fluidal energies. And these are something that we learn to harness in a little greater time later in life. Now I'm going to jump topics very, very quickly because for whatever reason I seem to be studying in this manner. And I'm going to get to one of the most controversial aspects of the Meyer material. And please listen and just bear with me because some of you will be tempted to turn this information off. And understandably, let me talk about the First Council of Nicaea. Constantine in 325 AD brought this meeting. Constantine, he was a Roman emperor, and he created this large meeting, and he set up the First Council of Nicaea, and he wanted to bring all of the Roman Empire under Christianity. At that time, the people worshipped Julius Caesar or Mithras. They also worshipped the Greek gods Apollo and Zeus. Julius Caesar was hailed as God made manifest and the savior of human life. So anyway, Constantine brought together all these religious rulers, and they, first of all, ironically, according to some sources, now this is a bit of a controversial, and again, this is some build-up, and this is through my own research right here, this part of it. The Council of Nicaea. That's something I'll have to look and see if Billy has talked about. I don't remember him ever really talking about the Council of Nicaea. But Constantine wanted to bring Christianity to the Roman Empire. And he brought all these different religious leaders together and he kind of forced them to Nicaea. And he said, okay, first thing you have to do is agree on the name of the leader of Christianity. Now, today everyone says, well, that's Jesus Christ. Of course, everyone knows that. But that was not so then. And I'll try to make this clear. Officially, Constantine could not get these religious rulers to agree. And some historians say that he said, well, we're going to call this person that we call Jesus Christ today, that the Meyer material calls Emmanuel, we're going to call him Jesus Krishna as the new name. And they wanted to appeal to one group. The Jesus group would kind of appeal to the European people because there were some religions in Europe at that time where they had gods, Druid gods, Jesus, and an Eastern savior god called Krishna. So he wanted to put these two names together. Now, you have to keep in mind, and this is the one thing that I learned and was truly amazed by, There was no letter J in any alphabets during ancient times. Now, that is going to sound like BS to some people. It's true. It's actually true, and you can verify this if you go and do some research. Real easy about the letters in the English alphabet. There was no letter J in Old English. And in fact, and we'll get to when the letter J came about. And some of this information you can pull off of a place called Yahweh.com if you're interested in this. Now, where did the letter J come from? I think the best source that I have said that the letter J came from a guy named Gian Giorgio Trevisano, who invented the letter J right around 1550. He was the first to distinguish the I and the J. He was a man from Italy who was a German scholar, and he invented the letter J for German and eventually became popular and went to other languages. Now, this is in 1500s. So that means whatever Jesus was called during his age, during the first, second, third century, it wasn't Jesus. In other words, there was no Book of Job either, no James, no John, no Julius Caesar. They had different names. My God, how is it that we don't know this? Well, let me continue. Originally, the Greek spelling for Jesus began with the letter I. However, they didn't pronounce it like an I. They pronounced it like a Y. And they pronounced the name Jesus. Jesus eventually became Jesus. Jesus. The hybrid name Jesus has no etymological root meaning. In fact, the letter J did not exist in any language until much, much later. In fact, the letter J didn't really become popular until after Christopher Columbus. Some people didn't say it really was never used. If you look at an unabridged dictionary under the letter J, you'll see that it really didn't come about until many, many years later. Now, in the first King James Bible, the name IESVS appeared, and you can find this out. There are websites which talk about this. In other words, the first time that Jesus or Iesus was actually called Jesus, I think, was in June of 1632 in a court document in England. The letter J, it originated as a swash letter used for the letter I. Swash letter is a fancy letter. Again, the Old English alphabet had no letter J in it, no W or U, no Greek, no Hebrew, none of the Aramaic had the letter J as well. The names of James and John were also different. Some scholars say James's name would be spelled today as Y-A-A-Q-O-V, and John's real name was Y-A-H-U-C-H-A-N-O-N. Very difficult for us to pronounce today. Some will argue there was a transition that the person that we call the Savior today was originally called Yeshua, and then he was called Iesus or Jesus in the Greek and Latin. And finally, in the English, Jesus. Remember, in the first 1611 version of the King James Bible, he was not called Jesus. He was called Iesus. And same with James and John. They were not called by those names. The book of Job was the book of IOB. There was another Bible as well, one of the other early Bibles, that the name of that Bible is leaving me at the moment. But there was another Bible where this was also the case as well. The letter J had not been substituted. What they did is they went and substituted for all these words that began with an I, the letter J. That came much, much later. In fact, if you look at the acronym, and you'll see this on the paintings of the crucifixions, there's an acronym, I-N-R-I, which is pronounced Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorum. In Aramaic, it's a completely different alphabet. In Greek, of course, is a different alphabet as well. But it was never Jesus. It was Iesus in Latin, Nazarenus Rex Iodorum, which today we say Jesus, the Nazarene King of the Jews. So I know that's a little off topic tonight, but it's support for what the Meyer material says is the real name of this individual, which was Emmanuel. It was not written in stone what his name was. And it certainly at that time wasn't Jesus. Now you can argue it was Jesus. You could argue that it was Yeshua. But you can't even make a logical argument that it was Jesus at the time. That is something that has occurred much, much later in the 16th and the 17th century. So history has been changed in ways which are absolutely mind-boggling, at least to me. And anyway, so what we've been doing a little bit is setting the stage, going back, talking about the contacts of Billy, talking about a little bit about some of his earlier life where he met Sfath, and going back over a little of the spiritual teachings. I hope you've enjoyed this evening. And we'll be back next week. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Good evening.